Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Another great show today dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and other kinds of things like that. Specifically today, I thought it would be good to talk about staying healthy spiritually. It's going to be a pretty wide-range subject. This is sort of the how-to kind of show. I hope that I'll cover something that might be relevant to each and every one of you. And it's going to be a show which might be, at some points, a little controversial, of course. And if you want, you can call in even. The numbers are right on your screen, 800 numbers at least. And if you live in the U.S. or Canada, you can use those. Or you can use the one that you got to pay for, which is, I don't know what that's, it's a great number, but you can use that one. And so let's get right into it. What do I mean by staying healthy? Well, even if you're ill, you could be more ill. Now, some people say, well, I'm dying ill. Well, yeah, you could die, but that's not necessarily the worst thing that can always happen to us. And we also have to consider this. When I'm saying staying healthy, I'm really getting into the areas in this show about what you can do to achieve that. Now, some of it might be also in healing. So this show will include concepts about how to heal yourself if you're not completely healthy. But staying healthy is really an interesting part of each of our lives. And it is a responsibility that we have to ourselves and to others. We can try to help other people who are having difficulty in staying healthy themselves. And that's part of what I'm including. That doesn't mean that we have to necessarily adopt the Health Care Reform Act, which is, we'll talk about that later. I don't want to get into that right now. So, staying healthy spiritually, what do I mean? Well, I'm saying that in order to stay healthy, you have to be spiritual to some extent, or health will eventually elude you. And you might say, oh, well, what about these people who do all these terrible things and they never get sick and everything else? Well, there's some tricks to being able to stay healthy and not be spiritual. You can do certain things, but those things have no long-lasting effect. They last only for a time. Where usually someone is doing very, we'll say, dark things, sometimes even evil, and they manage to steal energy and the ability to keep themselves feeling and looking healthy for a while. But in the long run, if we are not functioning within the thought of our Creator, that's what I mean by spiritual, the long run is inevitably going to lead to ill health and to aging, or what we call aging, and to eventually the destruction of the body or bodies that we are presently using to function in and to be active in. You need a body to be active. I don't know if you're aware of that, but that's very important. Bodies allow us to interact with our world, and without them, we're kind of stuck. We could exist without a body, but we can't interact without one in the dimensions of time and space that humans live in. So we're going to need to be thinking about that, and that's kind of the direction I'm going to move in first. Is what does it mean to have a body? What does it mean to do something to take better care of it and to make it fit within the thought of our Creator, so that the activities are in accord with that? And that's where I think I'll begin. If our activities are against our Creator, we create forces by retaining energies within ourselves. When you retain energies within yourself, the energy tends to float around major centers. It wants to be attracted into the major centers, because the major centers is where our thought is moving around and through. we'll call it, a part of our thought is consciousness. So it's where our, there is consciousness in those major centers. There are seven of them. Some people call them chakras. And each body's got them. And humans have seven in each of their three bodies that interact with the, we'll call them planes or dimensions of time and space that they exist in. Even though we're physically alive, we actually have three bodies. The three bodies are the physical, which includes the etheric or electromagnetic part, the astral, which includes all of what we call our feelings, emotions, and love that we sense within ourselves. There's other ways of loving, but the way we sense and feel love comes from that body. And then there is manasic or mental thinking, which is how we think in a mental sense. That thought involves time and the ability to unify it within ourselves so we have a sense of the past, present, and future and can do so all at the same time. We are unique in that we have a completed mental body compared to all other life forms below human. So although you might like your pet, say, your dog or cat and love it, it doesn't have a completed sense of past, present, and future all at the same time. Most of the time it doesn't. It gains a little bit of that by living around you. I bet you didn't know that. So that's what our mental body does for us. It completes the experience of living in three dimensions of time and space. And it completes it through our ability to transmit and communicate between the three bodies and make a wholeness of our lives in a mental sense. If we can't think mentally, or if we aren't healthy in our mental thoughts, then we don't have a full experience of our world, whatever world we're actually living in at the time. Even if we're living in the physical world, we still have a mental sense of the three parts of time, and that makes it complete for us. Very important. Interesting stuff. Okay, so we've got these bodies. They have major centers. They attract energy. Energy gives us a sense of things around us. We're attracting little tiny fractions of energy from everything that we sense. And that energy is supposed to go through us but not stay in us. As long as it's flowing, hey, and we're using the energy to co-create with our Creator, with God, the energy is doing a wonderful thing. It is bringing with it some of the life energy, we'll call it chi, as it moves through us. It's bringing some of the life energy up through, we'll call it the earth, think of it that way, it's kind of a neat thing, and it is keeping us alive and healthy. It's wonderful. But if we're thinking only of ourselves or mostly of ourselves, the energy kind of gets stuck in one of our major centers, and we'll go through where and why in a little bit. But it gets stuck in us, and when it gets stuck, that energy does a couple of nasty things. First of all, it starts deadening our sense. It starts adversely affecting some of the organs that are connected to one or more of our major centers. And therefore, the organ starts not working quite right. And this life energy that is going through us, one of the called kundalinis, actually its full name is Pingala. But if you don't need to remember the Pingala business, just call it chi. And that chi, that energy, is what enlivens us and keeps us, in a way, healthy by balancing all of the other centers in our body, both minor, which there are hundreds, and the seven major ones. When they're balanced, we feel healthy, and we feel good, and we're functioning like a soul. Consequently, we actually have a formula called soul balance that keeps us healthy. But it also keeps us alive because we are actually in tune with our soul and in tune with even higher sources and beings, all the way to a thing called a monad, yeah? And all of that is keeping us alive, amazingly. But if we keep the energy locked inside our own centers, our senses diminish, our organs start to fail or not function completely properly. We invite little buggers. We invite disease entities to come in and have a little meal on us. They feed on the energy in the center. And then they feed on eventually on the organ that corresponds to the energy in that center. And we begin to feel ill. Does that make sense to you? I know that's a lot. Boy, talk about a metaphysical, like jigsaw puzzle. That's a lot to take in. Now, I've done this kind of show before. Some of you may have the advantage of having heard it before. And you're saying, yeah, I'm finally getting it. Wow. Others of you may have just tuned in and said, well, what is this guy talking about? Is this far out stuff or something? Well, you know, this stuff that I'm talking about has been around since before recorded history. The same thing I'm talking about has been there. It's been taught in mystery schools. It's been sometimes hidden, but it's been there. The same thing I'm telling you about. So it isn't something like brand new. No, I didn't think of it in the shower this morning or whatever. It has been there for a long time, very long, before we can remember. And it is the key to staying healthy spiritually. If we don't understand this, no matter what else we do, we're likely to fall ill. Okay, so then what is the trick to this whole thing? Well, you could call it a trick, but it's being aware and understanding that we control how healthy we are by how we think and then how we behave, what actions we take. The more we correspondingly think and then interact as a co-creator with our creator or God, the more healthy we're going to stay because of the principles that I just described to you. It isn't that hard to understand it. It's a mechanism. It really is, although it's very spiritual. And it isn't, it can't be, dependent upon something that is purely mechanical, because you have to understand God to truly take charge of your health. Now you could say, well, what about animals? Some animals get sick, other ones don't. What about animals? Well, animals are controlled by the average thought of a group soul. They do not have an individual soul, so they're greatly dependent upon how their group soul in general has understood how to co-create with its creator, which is God. And some group souls are better at this than others, so some species of animals enjoy greater levels of health than others. As an animal becomes closer and closer to being a pet or is one of a human being, that animal starts taking on some of the characteristics of the human being, and some of its group soul's thought is not taking care of it as much as anymore, and it may be more prone to being ill if the human is not very virtuous. So that's a problem. Now, how many veterinarians understand that? I don't think a whole lot. That's a problem because, in a way, in order to really treat and cure an animal from that's connected closely to a human, we would call it, say, a pet, it becomes necessary to understand a great deal about the person that has the pet. And I don't know too many veterinarians that really get much into that side of things. That makes it very difficult then to treat animals. So I have some concern for that. But we all can improve the life of the animals that are close to us by living a more virtuous life ourselves. And being aware and conscious of our animals' senses and centers helps us to not only help them, but to help ourselves, because it's kind of a reflection of what's going on inside of us, too. They say, well, there's a collection of people around my animals. Well, usually there are. So they pick up a collection of energies from more than one person in some circumstances. That always leads to a complicated mess if you're trying to figure out how to best deal with an animal that is being affected by a family or a group of people, some of whom may not be functioning completely virtuously at any particular time. It is of great concern to think about that. The poor animals are really at the mercy of those around them when they become pets. Even if they're not pets and they're like farm animals and you're treating them with respect of life, they're going to be affected by those around them. So it is an amazing thing. It also means that we are affected by those around us that we choose to interact with on any kind of close level. So our health becomes connected to those that we choose to bring into our lives. And if we bring in people who are basically selfish and selfish in a number of ways towards not only the people they're close to, but other people as well, the results could be that we may cause ourselves to get sick. Wow. You didn't know that, did you? We can even make a general area that we inhabit a sick zone, because we literally can entrap the chi in the area by having enough people who are selfish, so that it becomes easier for people to become ill in the place that we inhabit or a place that those that are selfish around us inhabit. Yeah, that's what feng shui is really about. Amazing stuff. So we could go to places where there's a bunch of selfish people around and actually become ill by the way the qi energy is being retained in the area, the environment we're in. Now, if you're really virtuous, you can reverse it and make that area maybe more healthy for not only yourself, but for some of the other people, even though they may be functioning somewhat selfishly. Boy, is this stuff out there? Ah, really? I like it. Okay, so then what can we do on an individual level? I'll think I'll cover that next. And what sorts of things can we do to achieve and stay healthy if we're assuming that we're not going to be perfect, and perfection would mean that we're perfectly thinking and interacting with our creator, and if we were doing that, we would not get ill, would not get ill, and we would not age, and many other things. Perfect, if we were perfect. We're not perfect. So we're going to get ill to some extent, and we're going to age to some extent. Aging is really a destructive element caused by some levels of accumulated forces in ourselves because of selfishness. Now, again, the forces, I didn't quite cover that, but the forces are caused by when you retain energy. Another energy is being brought in through your senses that's hitting the energy that's retained, and that's the force. Energy against energy is a force. Okay, so that's how I define that. Simplest way to define it. So then how are we going to make ourselves healthy? This is going to sound strange. But the very first thing you need to do is to be focused out, not focused on the illness. If you're ill and you say, oh, well, I'm going to stay home, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to do anything because I'm just going to be concerned about the fact I'm ill. Well, guess what that is? A recipe for greater illness. I'm not kidding. Well, I got to take care of myself. I got to worry about whether I'm going to be this or that, because who's going to take care of me if I don't take care of myself? Well, if you don't pay attention to taking care of the world and everybody in it, and you don't, with the people you're interacting with, give and help them to become better givers themselves, like get them to function as a soul because you're functioning as one. If you don't do that, the results are you're going to get sicker, even if you think that you're really paying attention to all those things that are wrong. When people are around me and they're continually talking about what's wrong inside them in their health, I am aware of the fact that they are making themselves sicker. My first thing is to try to ignore them. Because the first thing anybody can do is to be an example of the teaching that they believe in. And so I do that. And then they probably say, well, why is he ignoring me? I'm so sick. Well, that's what I do. I ignore them possibly and probably in a more astral sense, meaning I don't become, oh, well, yes, you're so sick. We have to worry about you being so sick. What I'm trying to do is to get them from thinking only of themselves, get to the focus out, and that's the first step. The first step to health is to get yourself to become more focused out. Does that mean you should ignore an illness? Absolutely not. You say, oh, well, now you're contradicting yourself. No, I'm not. Are you ready for this? If you are thinking about an illness as and you accept that it's coming from your own selfishness, and you're working on trying to improve the selfishness, you can then say, I'm trying to treat myself, and I will get into ways to treat yourself this way, in a spiritual way, for the purpose of being of service to others, and I'm actually doing that service. It does not work. This thought process that I just gave you does not work if you're going to use it as like a con. Oh, well, I'll say I'm going to be spiritual sometime in the future, and then I'll fool my body into getting more well, and I'll forget about it later. Now, that will work. You can't cheat yourself because you know, and God knows, and your soul knows, and your body knows exactly what you really feel and think, and your motives cannot be twisted so that you fool yourself. It won't work. And so you have to actually be co-serving. There has to be some demonstration of it. And you can't say, well, I'm saving it up for later. I'll serve later. Just make me well now. Oh, please. I want to get well now. I'll serve later. It won't work. What if you're too sick to serve? What if you're too sick to do almost anything? Well, the interesting part about that is you have to do something to change even your ill health, and it has to be for truly the purpose of serving. And part of that service has to come in some way from either you astrally or mentally if you're too sick physically to do it. You can still do it by planning. You can do it by feeling for others, both planning and feeling for others, and using those other bodies to do exactly what I said earlier, which is to still be giving for the sake of helping others to give. Don't think that you could just like, oh, well, I'll get $5 out and give it to somebody so I can get over this cold. That won't work. That won't work. Now, if you help everybody else to give $5 to everybody else, that actually might work. But that's a lot tougher to do. Believe me, it's a lot tougher. Okay. I hope I'm not confusing you on this. This stuff is, I realize, it's not that easy to follow because all the things that people traditionally think are kind of inverted in this process of spiritual health. It's not, and the reason for that is obvious. If the process that people believe that makes like, oh, gee, it only made sense to me to have chicken soup and do this other stuff and not worry about it. If you really believe that, then how come so many people are so sick so much of the time? I heard on the news today that the number of people who are nearsighted in the last generation or so has increased 40-some-odd percent. It's a huge number. And the idiot that was, the guy who was talking about it, was worried about how much it was going to add to our health care costs because now we're socialists and we have to think about it that way. Well, how about thinking about this? Nearsightedness is exactly what that means. It means your focus is closer and closer to yourself. Oh, what an amazing concept. That's what nearsighted is? Yes, that's what it is. And when more and more people are nearsighted, guess what? Where their focus is? It's more and more on themselves. And so they are training themselves from an earlier age to become nearsighted. Nearsightedness, actually, you're not really born. Most people aren't born nearsighted. They don't know this, but most people don't know this. You develop it through the first few years of life, and the more selfish you are, the more nearsighted you become. And you can learn selfishness from those around you. And you can choose to be selfish, even if those around you are not selfish. But nearsightedness is not a good thing to be growing, because it tells us that our younger people, especially, are becoming more and more self-focused. You can say, well, what about those genetic issues? Well, I call genetic karma. You can call it whatever you want. But, and it's transferred to us from one life to another through genes. Yes, I agree with that, actually. But the point is, it comes from self-focus, and the self-focus, if it's truly, like if you really are born very nearsighted, there's a few people that are, that's because they were very self-focused in their last life or two. And I mean a lot. And so that they kept that. And when their soul decided to create their next person, it took from a lifetime, may not even be their very last one, those, we'll call it spiritual genes, and now they've got to live out their life as a result of some of their self-focus. So I listened to this today. You may have heard it on the news. It was all over the place. And, you know, it's just a weird thing that we don't understand the causes of things. So how in the heck are we ever going to get over dealing with them if we don't know what causes them? Self-focus causes nearsightedness. What an amazing idea. Okay, now you might say, well, some of you are going to say, what about farsighted? Well, this is going to sound strange, but farsightedness is actually caused by people who are only thinking too far ahead and not dealing with the moment. Now, farsightedness tends to happen in people as they get older. And it actually is caused by the aging mechanism of the lens of the eye, for the most part, in most farsighted people. But some people actually have a different thing, where the eye itself is elongated. And that's caused by, again, not staying with the moment and thinking of the future, and usually selfishly thinking of the future. Thinking of yourself in the future can lead to that kind of farsightedness. So there's two kinds. One that comes from aging, which is like an accumulation of not dealing with things in the moment. And it comes from, we'll say, spiritually, for a long period of time, having done this in prior lifetimes and having the eye elongated right when you're born, and, or as you grow older during the first few years and you start becoming farsighted at a very young age, which is not that common, but it does happen. Okay, we're running out of time for this segment, but don't go away, because I got a lot more to tell you about how to stay well and a lot of things like that. We should be back in about a little over 2 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we're talking about staying healthy spiritually. And I was just talking with Seth, our engineer, and it's really interesting. For the first time, I can actually hear what you're hearing sometimes while I'm in, we'll say, a distant studio from where he is, which is kind of neat. I like that. So I have a little more feeling for what's happening out there. So, otherwise, I'm just talking to this mic, and who knows whether you're hearing me or not, or anything else like that. So, let me continue on. We're beginning to see, I hope you're beginning to see, that if we're looking at staying healthy, we're looking at it from a more metaphysical and inward side than outward. Now, does that mean if you go around sick people, you're not going to get sick? No. I said just the opposite, if you recall. But the germs and all that business only infects some people. Have you noticed that? So you go someplace with someone and your friend doesn't get sick and you do, or vice versa. Well, why is that? Well, we had it before. No. Because there's a lot of instances where you know that that's not the case. They didn't have it before, but someone gets sick and the other one doesn't. Well, their immune system is better. Well, I can kind of buy into that. I definitely believe in the immunity system. But the real, real reason is that the immunity system is better in people who are focused out and serving others and don't have retained energy and are getting the chi to move healthily through them, and everything is working. And if the friend isn't like that, or it's the person, it may not be your friend, but maybe it's your enemy, I don't know, they're going to tend to get sick more if they're retaining energy before they're into the situation. And if while you're in a situation, even if you tend to get sick because you're selfish in general, if you're really focused out, you probably won't. Wow. That's something to think about. Now, I'm not recommending that people go into very ill circumstances and say, well, I'm going to be okay because I'm focused out. No, because when you think you're going to be okay, you may not be aware enough of how selfish or unselfish you've been. So you may not be as okay as you think you are. You certainly don't know some elements of your karma from a prior lifetime. Especially for young people, this is important. Older people, you know, don't live their lives so much controlled by their karma from a prior life. But young people do. So it is a concern, because most young people don't know the karma that is many times controlling some of their life. Something to think about. Okay. How are we going to get ourselves healthy? What do we need to be doing? Well, this is a great time of year to be considering that, because a lot of people are giving, in the mood for giving, in the religious thought of giving, or are giving because others are giving. And giving is a way to help yourself to stay healthy, but here's the rub about that. You need to be able to give in a way that's more universal, where you're trying to help others to be giving themselves, to become better givers themselves, rather than just give somebody a gift or a card or something. Because that really doesn't help them to become more giving. It may actually hurt them. So some people, giving to them is not a good answer for the situation. So this is the problem. Giving requires a great deal of consciousness. You've got to be able to be into the other person, our people that you're giving to, and understand what they need to be giving themselves. And that's a tough kind of understanding. You got to have a lot of empathy. The empathy has to be spiritual empathy, because spiritual empathy includes using your, we'll call it spiritual senses, to understand how much that person is connected to God and what you can do to help them to be more connected. I'm not talking about God in a religious sense, although that's okay if you did that as well. But I'm talking about God as a creative sense. You're helping them to become more creative in their life in a way that is virtuous, is good for others and them. And then they become more well, you become more well, and you're clearing out some of the energy within your own centers. Can you plan for it? Yes. But you need to take action when you can, and as soon as you can, when appropriate to do so. Action is part of our universe. If we don't include that third part of our own creator's mind, no matter how much we sit around and meditate and think about and plan, but not taking action on it, will result in more retained energy. And eventually we'll become older and more ill in the process. So there's a warning about people who say, yeah, but I go to my full moon meditation every month, and while I'm there, I think only good thoughts. And they're always about helping other people to be helping other people, because I don't do anything about it. And after I leave my meditation, I'm gone till the next month. And now I'm aging and sick and dying and all this other stuff. What did I do wrong? Well, I just explained it to you, didn't I? Okay, let's talk about some specifics. Some of the ailments that people have and what they can be looking into and making some changes. Now I'm getting more specific. I'm going to talk about, I gave you the general outline. You could say, well, okay, but what do I do about this or that? Some people in our world have problems in their heart and circulatory systems. Blood. When I say circulatory, the thing we're circulating for the most part is blood. We do have a lymph system, and that gets rid of the gunk. But I'm not talking about that system, at least not specifically at this point. I'm talking about the blood and the heart. And there are some other elements of that system as well. But still, those are the critical things. Why am I picking that first? Because that's the system that causes the greatest level of aging when it is out of whack. Have you ever noticed when people have significant elements, significant problems with the heart, what happens? They get older fast. Boy, do they ever age. Yeah. And then what else happens? Well, if the circulatory system is not working, all the other organs start to fail pretty quickly. So not only do people age, but they're inevitably going to have all kinds of subsidiary health problems. Sometimes they don't even realize that it's coming through their circulatory system. And how do I know that it's severe? Because more people die, at least in the western part of the world, which is where I'm talking from, the United States, but also in other countries like us, from heart disease and circulatory diseases in general, than any other reason. That's the main cause of physical death. So let's talk about it. Why does this occur in so many people? And why can we almost bet that if you have like five or six people, one of them's going to die from this illness? Wow, you didn't know that? Well, now you do. Okay, so what can we do to change that? And why? Let's start with where the problem is coming from. The heart chakra is one of the two spiritual chakras. So what does that mean? It gives us a sense of our creator. It gives us an understanding of what our creator is. The other spiritual center is called the head chakra, and that gives us a sense of how to co-create with our creator. We have to understand our creator to some degree before we're going to co-create. So the heart chakra is like primary And then the head chakra is more secondary because we're going to be able to use our primary understanding to then become more creative. But for a lot of people, they choose to not be co-creative, to not understand their creator. They choose to ignore the awareness they could have of what is the right way, the good way to be. And this is epidemic in the Western world, particularly. The results are that more and more energy is retained in the major center called the heart chakra. Connected to the heart chakra are dozens of other centers that are called minor centers, but there's no consciousness connected into those minor centers. They do take in energy, and they do give it out, but there's no direct thought that flows through them. So we can't become directly aware of what's happening in a minor center in ourselves. We might be slightly aware of it in others, and if you're an acupuncturist, you might know what I'm talking about. And that's what acupuncture does. Is it deals with some of these minor centers in the physical body. Now, in the other two bodies I mentioned, the astral and the monastic or mental bodies, there are corresponding centers. So everything I'm saying that I'm relating more to the physical body today, because we're not going to have time to go into those other bodies, would be somewhat true for these, we'll call more advanced, higher bodies that we function through slightly while we're physically alive. What the body that you mostly function through is where you are mostly alive in. We're mostly alive physically, so that's the body we function through most of the time. That doesn't mean we don't have senses and we can't function mentally and astrally. We do that as well. But we're more aware of the physical sense. It's more directly in our face. And we can feel physical touch and other things easier than we can feel our emotions or our mental thinking. All right, so getting back to what I was saying, heart chakra, major problem for us. How do we solve it? It's interesting. This is going to sound strange, but to solve the heart chakra problem, you don't need to be giving more necessarily to others as people. You need to be giving more to God as God. This sounds really strange. If you want to solve a heart problem, you need to become spiritual in this way. You need to be very concerned that life in general, which is God's growth, is growing more for the sake of growing God more, for the sake of creating more goodness, more light, more freedom, more creation of the type that is God in the universe. That if that is your goal, if that is your concern, you can clear out the energy in your heart chakra, and the result will be greater health in your heart and circulatory system. It'll lower high blood pressure. It will improve the results. But you've got to be concerned about doing that. And at your level of response, if you're capable of doing more and you're doing less, even if you're doing more than your next door neighbor or your friend or your enemy, but you're not doing anywhere near what you could be doing yourself, guess what the results are? Not good. You're probably going to croak of heart disease and circulatory problems because you could be doing more than you're not. And so you still end up retaining energy in the heart chakra. And over time, and this is an illness that tends to accumulate much more in a longer-term sense. Most people who die from this die later in life, not earlier. Could you die from it early in life? Yes, but usually then there's a karmic implication. If you die especially before 30, it's almost always karmic. But that's a rarity. Most people die of this after, you know, they're in their 50s or 60s. That's when they go. Okay, so you got to love God. Wow, what an idea. You've got to love God not as God is a God, a single entity, but God as what God is, the growth of life itself. You've got to love life and its growth and seek to find ways of improving this life all around you in every way possible, then you can treat this very serious illness. And you can stay healthy if you do it. If you don't have the illness, and you'll live longer and better, and you'll age much less, because this causes a lot of aging. So people who live this way, guess what they look like? Young. They don't look like they're aging. Or they're aging much slower than their contemporaries. Because it's one of the main reasons people age. Wow. Think about it. I know this stuff is way off the charts. A lot of people go, well, I always thought that I'd stay healthy because I eat this food, or, you know, the oatmeal, I eat oatmeal, and I go out running. And well, you could do all that stuff, and you still may drop dead of a heart attack or have high blood pressure or some other problem. Yes, because it isn't, unfortunately, that which is going to keep you alive. Now, should you do those things? Absolutely. Because once you become aware that those things help to some extent, the physical organ and other things like it, then you should be doing some things that are helpful, yes. But, you know, the weird part about this is you probably have recognized this. Some people don't do those things, but they have very healthy hearts. How do you explain that? Well, by what I said, because there's esoteric, which means hidden, reasons that are based upon spirituality and metaphysics that go way beyond what you're eating for breakfast. Way beyond. Okay, let's go to the next center that I think is probably critical, and that is the solar plexus area. The solar plexus area. You might say, well, what is that? What is a solar plexus area? The reason I'm picking this has to do with the fact that I'm speaking for the United States. I'll bring this tied together before the end of the hour, I hope. And the solar plexus area is like, think of it as your, where your tummy is. Yeah, that's it. And that's where the energy that this area, that this major center is located in, the organs in that area. Oh, and where are they? Well, to some extent, the spleen. It also, the spleen has to do with another center as well. But think of it more as the liver and the stomach, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And the liver is the big organ in that area. And then also you got other organs like the pancreas, which is involved with the stomach and the liver. It's kind of an interesting thing. But the liver is a biggie. It's the biggie. So what happens? Do people have problems in this area? Does this cause a lot of issues in terms of aging and death? Oh, yeah, you better believe it. Yeah. The liver is probably the single most important organ in that area. And what it does is it's like the big chemical factory thing. And almost anything we do in any other part of our body that's abused gets nailed in the liver as well. It's like the liver is the mirror of our whole body. And everything that's bad going on inside of us because we're being self-focused comes out in some way in some specific element of how the liver is functioning. Wow. Okay. So in what way are we tending to be selfish when it involves a solar plexus area? We tend to be selfish in an astral way. Astral selfishness comes out as the most common form of daily selfishness. It's not so much as fatal in an immediate sense as having a heart attack. It takes much longer, and the illnesses that it produces are more protracted in a chronic sense. And you may not even die from them, but you certainly will age from them. And they make you sick in a lot of different ways. Stomach ailments, always going on with a lot of people. So this sixth type of energy, which is really what we're talking about when we talk about the chakra that deals with six type of energies, is being used very frequently because we are creatures of emotionality when we are self-focused. And humans are particularly affected by this, although animals are too. They're very, very astral as well. And so So there's a tendency for us to develop a lot of illnesses that are related to this particular area. You might say, well, does this cover colds and flu and stuff? No, that's another chakra. That's the throat chakra. I don't know if we'll have time to get to that today. But I'm dealing with the chakras that I think cause people more long-term ailments, whereas the odd thing about the third-ray illnesses is they tend to come and go pretty quickly. If they don't kill you, you're pretty well within a week or two or more, and that's it. That's not so much true with the longer-term illnesses that come from the solar plexus area. Now, how do you stay well if you're going to be around the solar plexus area? Well, you need to become very, we'll say, focused out in terms of love instead of being emotional. The more emotional you are, the more you're going to cause a lot of illnesses in this particular chakra. And the chakras, in the many, there's probably, I said dozens before with the heart, there could be even like 50, 60 chakras that end up being connected in a minor way. These are minor chakras, with the major chakra of the solar plexus. And you may not be able to digest your food properly. You may not be able to do a lot of things because this center is screwed up. Focusing out in the solar plexus arena means that you are not emotional, but you have great feeling. See, a lot of people think, oh, he means not emotional. I won't feel anything. I'll be like a robot or something. No, I mean the exact opposite. You're going to feel more about everything, but you're not going to become emotional about the feeling itself. Instead, you're going to direct the feeling away from yourself and use it to help other people do the same thing. Help other people to become less emotional and to use their feelings to continue to help and serve God. And to serve God by helping all of life to become less emotional, including animals now. Less emotional and more giving. That's the process. You've got to become more giving. And you've got to give in a way that helps others to become less emotional. Wow. Overcome their emotions and yet increase their feelings, not decrease their feelings. So don't get confused between the two, because that's an easy thing to get confused about. Okay. And can you do this on a daily basis? Absolutely. It's called detachment. And using the ability to reason and think about where you're coming from versus how you feel. It doesn't deny your feelings. It just changes your feelings into something that you are going to use to be of service to others rather than to be controlled by. And it makes a huge difference when you do this. Now, what about things like taking herbs? Because herbs, many of them are swallowable, and they end up affecting the solar plexus center in some way. Well, you know, herbs are great because if you use the right herbs, and usually you have to use as many herbs as there are, and this gets complicated, as there are minor centers connected to the major center. So let's say you're using herbs to correct a problem in your solar plexus center, and let's say there's 70 minor centers, there's going to be 70 herbs or more. And you can say, well, I've never seen a formula with 70 herbs or more. Well, you haven't seen our formula. We have a formula called Soul Balance. This particular formula has way over 100 herbs in it. Whoa, because we're dealing with the real cause of things. And that means we're going to try to rebalance the chi energies that are moving through various centers, including the solar plexus center, and to get it to work properly. Wow. Now, Soul Balance is more complicated than what I just said, but at least gives you an idea of how it might work. It's really cool. Anyway, you know what? I'm running out of time. Oh, no, I can't believe it, and I would love to tell you so much more. If you have a chance, stop by and see Mimi over at Mesa Fiesta Borders, 7 p.m. to 8:15. She's going to be talking about the Atlanteans. That's on Monday, this coming Monday, December 21st. Also, check out Ideal Soul Sorption Resveratrol. Still using that stuff. You can get some if you want. Please give Forever Young Products a call, 800-777-7850. We are out of time. So sorry. Got to go. And hopefully we'll cover much more of this subject another day. Until next time, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.